Arnold Schoenberg has been described as the Satan of modern music, but James Wright believes Schoenberg was a visionary, and he's invited other Schoenberg scholars to Carleton University this weekend to talk about the composer's work. James, good morning.
Good morning, Kathleen. I'm delighted to be here.
That is not the latest music I've ever heard.
Perhaps not, but one of the things one says about Schoenberg is it's this like all great music, it's this wonderful balance of heart and brain. There is a cerebral component involved, but it's also emotionally heartrending music.
Why did people refer to him during his day, as at least some of them did, the Satan of the music world?
Well, that's probably a little bit harsh, but certainly in Schoenberg's own time, and particularly in his during his early years in Vienna, his music met with some unequal reception, to say the very least. He was redefining harmonic language, redefining musical language. He was really rolling up his sleeves and trying to understand how music could be organized differently. We'd had a long tradition of harmonic vocabulary that stretching back centuries, that in Schoenberg's view needed to be reevaluated in the 20th century. A new voice, a new language for the 20th century.
Why did it need to be reevaluated in his view?
In his view, it was a new world in the 20th century. Humanity was going through a new stage. He was experiencing convergence of tensions in Vienna and so on, and he felt that any responsible composer needed to understand how best music could express these feelings. He also felt that it was the duty, the responsibility of any composer to understand his or her historical position, and not simply to mimic the music of the past, but to reinvent language, musical language in some way.
Because when you listen to it, there's, I am no music critic, but there's a sort of a darkness and a drama to the sound. And was that the time?
Absolutely. Turn of the century Vienna has often been regarded as a sort of converging point of sort of a number of trend lines in the early 20th century. We had political developments. We had the rise of Marxism, industrial complex Europe. We had the revolutionary tensions going on. We had certain kinds of racist tensions.
The
we
Nazis.
Had the rise of anti-Semitism in the early 20th century. And all of these things were kind of converging on the human psyche in that particular time and place. And, Vienna at that time has been described by a Viennese critic, Karl Kraus, as the laboratory for world destruction, in the sense that all of these tensions were landing in this one place and converging. And the great flowering of artistic activity that resulted, we have it in the arts, in architecture, Gustav Klimt, the paintings of Klimt, in philosophy, Ludwig Wittgenstein, and in music centered around the Second Vienna School of Arnold Schoenberg and his students.
And who did he influence, James? Just to help us sort of have an example of how he, when you say he tried to redefine, who embraced that new definition and then used it.
In fact, I've often thought that Schoenberg is to the 20th century what Richard Wagner is to the 19th century. He's the composer in relation to which all other composers needed to take a stance. So he sort of defined the terrain in that sense. So in answer to your question, in fact, there are very few composers who were not in some way influenced by Arnold Schoenberg. Some stood against his development, some stood with him. An entire generation of post-war American composers dedicated themselves to exploring the implications of Schoenberg's ideas. And the film composer Bernard Herrmann, we see the application of Schoenberg's music in so much film music, for instance, particularly maybe of the sort of thriller genre, the well-known shower scene from mm-hmm. the Hitchcock film Psycho, for instance.
What do you want people to know about Schoenberg the man?
Well, he has to be one of the most fascinatingly multidimensional characters in all of music history. He's a wonderful family man, someone who was involved with his children in many ways, made toys for his children and games for his children. In the musical world, he's a wonderful teacher. Arnold Schoenberg had a
an incredible capacity for sort of organizational thinking. And he applies that not only in his music, but also he wanted to redesign the Vienna transit system, for instance, and kept continually sent them letters, sort of imploring them to rethink the way their schedules worked and so on. He designed a coalition chess game. He's constantly playing games with organization in many ways. He even plays games with the ordering of the letters of his name in the naming of his own children. His name is Arnold. His daughter, his firstborn, who is coming to Ottawa later today, is Nuria. You can hear the A-R-N, of course, there. Lawrence is his youngest. Ronald is simply an order variant of the name Arnold. And that tradition goes on. His grandson, nephew, Randall, R-A-N-D-O-L,
Isn't
and so on.
Isn't that interesting? So we've got these concerts, we have this conference, and I'm sure very complicated putting all this together, and it did not help that you had, as I understand it, great difficulty getting your multimedia exhibit into the city. What happened?
Well, as ventures of this kind, as is typical of ventures of this kind, we were somewhat budget limited, so I decided to go down to Boston myself to pick up the exhibit in the largest U-Haul that you can imagine. And I did this, of course, on New Year's Eve, of all of the unlikely times. And so when I came to the border, I had documentation in place, of course, and I anticipated that there would be some serious questions asked about this, but they simply didn't believe me. The border agent said, tell me this story again. You're a musicologist. You're driving across with this U-Haul, and you have works of art. Is that what I understand in the back? And of course, I said, no, these are educational materials. These are not works of art. And the debate went on, and I was there for, about 6 hours, threatened with being placed in one of those confinement rooms. And of course, I was being very cooperative. It was really, really quite a challenge. I went through several shifts of border agents. And finally, the new border agent, so the last border agent who came on, was an amateur musician, and he knew of Schoenberg. And so after interrogating me a bit further and deciding what taxes should be paid on this cargo, he finally let me across after 6 or 7 hours sitting at the border. And the interesting thing about that, when I told Lawrence Schoenberg about this story, he said what a remarkable story. He said that is very much in the spirit of Schoenberg bringing this exhibit across, facing adversity and soldiering ahead and so on. I'd also come through snowstorms in the mountains of New Hampshire and so on. But he said the other thing that Lawrence said was that it's remarkable that it took an amateur musician to let you across, because he said something my father always said is what the world needs more of is amateur musicians.
I wish you luck with this. It sounds like it's going to be really interesting, and I hope you get a good turnout for it. Great to meet you.
Great to meet you, Kathleen.
James Wright is a professor of music at Carleton University. He's organized a symposium on Schoenberg taking place there this weekend. And along with the scholarship, There Is Music, for Schoenberg concerts are included as part of the Chamber Music Festival. The first is the gala tonight at Christ Church Cathedral. And Schoenberg's three adult children will be there. And if you attend, you will walk past the multimedia exhibit on Schoenberg. It's on display at the cathedral from tonight until Sunday, and you can check that out for free.